Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us tonight for Satsang. I'm Shisada Akona Kamara, and you're with the Shambhala Center for Spiritual Awareness. We couldn't be more pleased to have you with us. I'm joined tonight by Piela Yen and our other core council members, Linda, Megan, and Tim. And we're going to go ahead and get started. So take a deep breath. Call yourselves forward. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light for each one of us listening to the program. I ask that these shafts of light be brought to the center of the earth. And I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I also call on the legions of Michael to completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. Now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. And PLEN and I place ourselves in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. I'm going to ask you to stay here with me for a second. We were part of a global meditation this week for a group called the Azure Energy Global Collective. And once a month they do a meditation called Embrace the Space, where they ask for a two-hour period that you, you know, meditate or pray or sing or dance, however you have to, whatever you have to do to get in your heart, that you do that and hold that, hopefully for a two-hour period that is 7 to 9 at night, kind of wherever you are in the world. And I facilitate that here in Charlotte, and it was a very, very powerful meditation this month. And actually, we're going to take one song from that to end our program with tonight. The thing that we're capable of doing as divine beings on this planet is using the dispensation of the violet flame to help transmute the discordant and disqualified energies that are seated here on the planet. And it is a very valuable tool to use for anyone doing spiritual work and anyone who has an awareness of it. So tonight what we're going to do is take just a minute and let's internally offer yourself as a vessel for spirit, that we may be used just for the course of these few seconds to transmute any disqualified energy that we can get in touch with through our own vessel. So I'm going to ask you to take a deep breath. I'm going to chime my bell a few times here. And let's just focus on the violet flame allow whatever it is to come through your beingness. If you feel something, if you feel it in your body, if you feel it as an emotion, if you see something in your inner sight, whatever it is, just bathe it in that violet fire and let's let it be purified. And then we'll transmute it back to its original perfection. So take a nice deep breath and place yourself in service. Ask everybody right now, focus on your throat chakra, please. There's a lot of constriction there. I felt the same thing Tuesday night, and it's there right now. So let's all of us work to transmute some of that collective constriction right now. Throat chakra, first ray, the blue ray. Let's call on Archangel Michael to come in and breathe out the blue ray into our throat chakras. As we breathe it in, it's a nice electric, like a cobalt blue, gorgeous color. You may even see it kind of scintillating with white in it, gorgeous color. Let's focus on that all around your throat chakra. Take a deep breath. Wonderful. Oh, that was very effective. You can come back to me now. Very effective. There are many, 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 many people on the planet who don't have a voice right now. And we're dealing, you know, God knows the whole country of Palestine doesn't have a voice. And we have all these children in the United States right now who have come up through Central and South America. They don't seem to have much of a voice either. And that's where this constriction is coming from. So I thank you all from the bottom of my heart for putting yourselves in service tonight to help alleviate that, because it needs to be done. So thank you for that. Okay, PLAN. PLAN. Where are we starting tonight?
Well, last week you left us with something, but it doesn't necessarily mean that this is where we have to start. Okay. So what you left us with was, what if the collective woke up and changed the belief that everyone believed that they could live to be 1,000? In that moment, it would be truth, and we would be living it.
Yeah, and not believe from a conceptual place, but actually to carry the knowing of it. And yeah, that absolutely is accurate. We wouldn't even be living in this reality anymore and just be done. Wouldn't that be amazing? Won't that be amazing? Right? Won't it be? Not wouldn't it be? You have to really be careful about your language. I have a particular student I'm looking at right now. I'm constantly getting at him about his language. It's so limiting, right? And it's a funny thing because the more I find all the time students who sit with me and they're working with me and they're like, I know what you're saying, but I can't figure out how to describe it or how to say it, how to put it to words. And the whole thing is because you're not carrying it as you're knowing yet. So when something is conceptual, we will struggle with a way to describe it. But when you carry it as your knowing, the words will always be there, and they'll always be very clear, very, very clear. And it's a beautiful thing, right? And that's the one thing about people like myself, and we drive people batty a lot of times because we're constantly pushing people for greater clarity. Because what happens is from the space of the personal self will always automatically assume that you know what they're talking about. Because the bottom line for the personal self is that, well, you should know what I'm talking about because I'm right anyway, right? And that's where the personal self sits. My viewpoint is the right viewpoint. I know that because I hold it. What more do I need to say? So when I bring my grievance to you, whatever I give to you, you should just automatically understand it because I'm right. And you should get that. Now, a lot of you are going to argue with that. Well, I don't do that. Well, of course you do. You can argue it, but that's what sits underneath it. So I'm forever saying to someone, I need you to be a little more clear about that. Would you clarify that? Right? Because the one thing about someone who's very clear is they don't make assumptions. I will not assume to understand what you're saying to me until I know that I know what you're saying to me. Right? Then we had a beautiful example of this personally within our board, didn't we? Not long ago. Do you know what I'm talking about? When we had a meeting, we got a new office space, and we had a meeting with someone who the person
yes,
we
I
were going to get the office from. Do you want to share that? Because that's a really good illustration of this.
Okay, so now do you want me to actually get into what the thing is with the office space?
No, I don't think it needs to be that detailed. But you could.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So we have this new office space, and there was a rule that was set in place. That so Shusara and Tim and I were here, and we were all in the room and with the our landlord, who was showing us the office space and going over the rules and everything. And it came up later that Shusara had one understanding of something that the landlord had told us, and Tim and I had a completely other understanding. And so of course, at first, if two people think one thing, one person thinks the other, you'd be like, but we, you know. So anyway, Shusara, of course, said, no, you need to look at that. And she said, now, why wouldn't you be clear? Because I'm clear. And then I realized,
I don't think they found it funny at the time, though, I have to say.
Well, and then I realized, Tim and I had this whole other kind of conversation going on at the same time while the landlord was talking, and we definitely weren't clear. So
what happened was in that moment, you know, the three of us were there speaking to her about kind of the terms of the lease and all of this stuff. And I was very present with her. So my focus was on the landlord, and she made a couple comments that left me unclear, even if it was a small bit, but unclear. And so I questioned her, and I questioned her from a place where I knew that as soon as I got the answer to my specific question, I would be very clear, right? So I asked a very specific question, I got the answer, and then I basically kind of reworded it back to her and said, is that correct? And she said, yes. At that point, I was as clear as I needed to be. So Pielian and Tim had this kind of undercurrent of a dialogue going on that wasn't even being verbalized necessarily, other than a couple comments that went back and forth. But the dialogue was just internal on both of their ends, because they were thinking of, you know, they were kind of just engaged in different parts of the story of getting the office space, let's say. So that left them in a space where they couldn't be present with her. Right? Because if the dialogue is running and that dialogue is a story, you can't be present. You're not present in that moment. You're present in the moment of the story, right? But not present here in this now moment, So they missed a piece that was very obvious to me. And then later when they argued with me about it, I said, no, I'm pretty sure, because I won't argue a point if I'm not clear. And I'm clear. So check it out, right? And she did, and she recognized that she'd been mistaken. But it was a very valuable experience for her, because she saw in the moment, oh, wow, like, you really have to be vigilant, right? It does take vigilance, yes?
It was only really literally like maybe a few, less than 5 seconds, I think. Felt like it. I don't know.
That you, like, weren't there, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
I think it might have been like a side comment between the two of us. That was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think your side was something like, well, can we just, let's make the decision already?
Basically.
Something like that. That's
funny. I think it was something like, if you know, you know. That was it.
Yes, and there's the story, right? And here's the opposition. So she's holding one side. She sees him as separate from her, holding the other. And there you go. And what more do you need? It's all in place. And this happens, you know, all the time. And it's just a funny thing that you'll find that people like myself, we're just really super nitpicky about when we talk to people, because the person on the other side may be experiencing the same exact thing, right? So maybe they have their own story going on and they aren't even fully present. And so I'm only receiving a certain level of communication. And of course, this is the challenge with my students, right? Because my students aren't clear. Or they wouldn't be students. Correct? So when the student comes to you and they're not clear and they're giving you information, you have to keep asking and you have to keep digging, you know, and then making them dig. And it's this constant, you're constantly working with people. You're not teaching them to become clearer. You're not teaching them to look at how, you know, in depth they're looking at things or how they're really describing things. But because of your line of questioning, it's teaching them, right? And then after a time, they start coming to you from a very different place where now they're giving you pretty much everything that you need to see. And you don't have to ask anymore because it's all right there because they've seen enough for themselves. So it's a beautiful thing. You know, it's this ongoing work. But that's exactly what the mind will do. It's engaged in a story. When it's engaged in a story, it can't be here now. It just can't be. So take that little gem and bring it to your relationships at home. Bring it to your relationship with your kids or your spouse or your parents or, you know, your boss, coworkers, whatever it is in life. And look to see where you're missing the communication and you're missing the clarity because you weren't present, right? And it's also a good opportunity for you to look to see if you shy away from asking for clarification, because a lot of people won't do that. A lot of people will walk away from a conversation unclear, and they'll know they're not clear, right? And I've been with people like that before, and I'm looking at them like, well, do you understand what that person, you know, really wanted? And the answer is, well, I think I do. And I'm standing like scratching my head, like, well, so why are we here now? Like, why didn't you ask the question? You know, and there, you'd be surprised there. I mean, I'm sure that someone is listening tonight who knows that experience, because there's a fear that I'll look stupid. There's a fear of, oh, they're going to judge me for not understanding, like I should have gotten it in the first place, right? And I'll ask a question 20 times if I don't feel like the answer I got was clear. You okay over there? Megan's spritzing herself with our liquid smudge. Clear the space, Megan. That's beautiful.
Is that from what she just said?
No, my anxiety is coming.
Well, that's good. Allow the anxiety to come. Yeah, it's there to show you something, right? So let's use that as a little teaching for tonight, because this is good too. We were just talking about this in our Charlotte session, and I have to figure out how I'm going to kind of word this. There's an interesting kind of paradox. Is it a paradox? There's this interesting interplay that happens with people who do deep inner work. We come into understandings mentally first before we have the experience of the understanding that then leads us to knowing it versus having a mental understanding of it, right? So first off, get that locked in. That's just how it works. Okay. You'll be given an understanding from a guide, from a teacher, whatever, from a book. And so the brain will take it and the brain will process it based on what it has within its database of memory. And it'll try to make sense of it to the best of its capacity. Okay, great. That's a great start. So we take that. Now, at some point, you start to function from the understanding, and then you will witness in your world something happen in your life that will lead you to an experiential understanding of the same concept. So now we're taking it from a mental place and we're internalizing it to the space of, oh, I know that. Like, I just walked through that, right? So now it's when I talk about it, it's not coming from my head. It's coming from my beingness, right? Reminds me of, like, you know, my mom always used to say to me, like, she was a huge supporter of learning, because she says, you know, when you go to school and you learn, no one can ever take that away from you. Like, once it's in there, you've got it, right? It's similar. Once you experience something and then you see the connection between what you were given as an understanding and then now you just walked it and you can see it, how it applied in the world, right? Now you're functioning from a very different place and you'll never forget the experience. It's a beautiful thing on your path, is you will have these experiences that will stand out as singular experiences along the way, where it was like, wow, like that was where I got it. You know, I'd heard her, you know, I heard Shasada say this probably 50 times and I thought I understood it. And every time I heard her say it, I thought I understood it a little better or a little deeper. But wow, when I had that one experience, everything shifted. And now I get it. Right? Now I get it. And you'll never forget it. So we have that has to happen. And it's a very natural progression. But the trick is that people get stuck in the mental part of it. And the lower mind itself, you know, is very, very subtle. I wish there was a word beyond subtle that I could point to for the mind. Because it's like, you know, subtle to the power of 100. It's so, you know, adept at doing what it does. And what I was, what came up during the session was that, you know, mind will take the spiritual understanding itself and use that as the piece that will keep you from having the experience of it. And PLN had a story that pertained to that tonight that was really great. You want to share that again? She's talking a lot tonight.
So we're talking about the one with inadequacy?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, my issue is inadequacy. I feel like I'm an AA. Hi, my name is Piala.
This is just a 10-step program for inadequacy.
Yeah, so I actually have this really bad habit of, because I have the understandings and the knowings, that I will use that to swing out instead of looking further at what needs to be looked at. And so there was an issue with inadequacy that I needed to...
Okay, let me stop you just for a second.
Go ahead.
So when you say you use that to stop you from looking further at what needs to be looked at, now I want you to tell everybody listening why you do that.
Because I don't want
the mind always has an agenda, right? The personal self always has an agenda. What's the agenda behind that? Using the understanding to swing yourself out.
To keep me there.
And to keep you from where?
From knowing that I'm not inadequate.
And how would you get there?
To know that I'm not inadequate?
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, you get there by knowing that you are God.
No. You're missing the little piece. So okay. The mind with its agenda, okay, mm-hmm. The personal self has an agenda. The agenda is very specific. And so it uses its spiritual understanding to keep you from doing what? If it's to swing you out, what's it keeping you from doing?
From looking further, from...
And what?
From experiencing...
Thank you.
What's really going on.
That's right. From a very... What place? Where do you experience it from?
That's important. I'm going to say heart.
No.
Emotion.
Yes.
Right?
Thank you. Oh. Yeah. It's purely the emotional body, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is really important. This is why I was very picky about how we got here, because it's not that it's keeping you from experiencing the mental aspect of what needs to be seen. It's the emotional aspect, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the energy.
I see what you're saying.
The energy gets locked into the emotional body. The energy isn't locked into the mental body. It's locked into the emotional body. Okay. This is super important. So now we'll go back to your story. So what she saw, and I'm just going to recapitulate, what she saw was that she would use a spiritual understanding, and that particular understanding I'll just throw in is what the imprint itself is. And you've heard me talk about the primal imprint. So she has the understanding of what the imprint is, and she can look at her own inadequacy and relate it back to things that happened in her childhood, but she can always take it to the imprint and say, well, no wonder I feel inadequate. It's because the imprint, you know, this is what happened, blah, 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 and this is where I sat. Okay, now you take it from there.
And so I was actually talking to Atona, and she said, no, stop going back to the imprint. And she actually started to talk about some experiences with me that had happened in life, and more experiences. And she said, okay, now you need to go back in and look at those experiences. And she hit some things in a certain way that, I had not allowed myself to look at, so that I was like, oh, that was a little more painful than I thought it was. And so what happened was when I actually allowed myself to go back in and experience the pain of those many situations, I actually saw that was just kind of like overlaying what the real pain was, and that I really was really, really mad at God and very hurt and felt abandoned. And I actually had this whole 2-hour long, very intense cry, because it was just so painful. Like, I've just felt abandoned like all my life by God.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so we can, and this is the tricky part, because right from the beginning, I have to give the people I work with, you know, and you all are included in that, I have to give you the understanding that what's happening here in the fallen human condition is that there is nothing personal, right? And that anytime you are in opposition to anything, whatever it is you're in opposition to, is the light. It's God. So it's not you angry at your father. It's you angry at God, right? Anytime there's anything opposing you, anytime, I don't care what it is, and I don't care how it's like, he just slapped me, so it's him that I'm angry with. No, it's not. It's God. It always is. Every single time. There are no exceptions. Now, here's the tricky part. I can give you that understanding, and then what can happen is that we can fall back on that as our understanding and use it as a means to keep us from doing the actual work, right? And I've seen a lot of light workers, or at least people who call themselves light workers, use that all the time. Oh, I've seen that over and over again. People saying, like, oh, well, none of this is real anyway, so it doesn't really matter if I do the work or don't do the work, right? None of it's real anyway. It's like, oh, lovely, you know, stay in denial and take another 26,000 year go round. Go right ahead, because that's just denial. That's all that is. It's denial. There's fear sitting there. And anytime anyone comes at you from that place, that indifferent place, right? Well, what's it matter? You know, I do it, I don't do it. It's all the same. You're indifferent. No, you're not. You're in pain and you don't want to look at it. And that's the bottom line of indifference. And I've talked about indifference before on the show, but I'll say it again. And I can't say it enough because, boy, people love to use indifference, you know. Yeah, I think, Susan called me on the phone and asked me if I could go, you know, go have dinner with her on Thursday. Would that be okay with you? Yeah, whatever. Go ahead. I don't care. Do whatever you're going to do. Do you think he really means that? No. And does she know that he doesn't mean that? Of course she does. Why? Because of the energy that sits underneath it. Remember, your words can say one thing, but your energy is what tells the truth. Because you can't hide it. You can't mask your energy. Ever. I was saying to one of my students recently that that's my job. As I'll sit there with my students and you'll be telling me, spinning a whole story and giving me all this stuff. And I don't even need to listen to the words because all I have to do is tune into the energy. And I'll feel where it's off, right? And that's my job. If I listen to your words, I'll be deceived, won't I? Because even though you're the seeker and you're coming to me for assistance and you want to cut through all of the illusion, right? You want to achieve enlightenment. This whole story. And you're coming to me from that place. Even though that's happening, are you really speaking truth to me most of the time? Of course not. Not till later. In the beginning, oh my gosh, no, are you kidding me? You're trying to hide everything from me. All the time. Pelion's laughing, smiling at me. She's like, oh, I used to do that. Right?
I did.
That's right.
Got now, caught in a big lie, too.
You did get caught in a lie. Yeah, I got caught in a lie once. I did. It was, I love telling my stories because they're always so funny. I was, I was in communication with a person that, Atona was doing some work with. This was many years ago. This was about 8 years ago. And she asked me to relay a message to this person just through email, you know, and I don't even remember what the message was. It's not important, but I didn't do it. And the next time I got on the phone with her, she said, so what did so-and-so say? And I lied to her. I lied to her because I couldn't stand the thought that, oh my God, like I failed her, you know, like here's my guruji, like I failed her. And I couldn't stand it. So what I did was, and this is a beautiful representation of how the mind works. I lied to her. And then as soon as I got off the phone, I contacted the person. Right. And I contacted the person in such a way that my lie was only a lie because it came before my contacting the person. You see what I'm saying? So the way that the person responded, my lie wasn't a lie anymore, except in the context of timing. Right. And I was like, oh, goody for me. Like I worked it out. That's fantastic. Okay. So later that night, I'm laying in bed and I was like, oh, my God. Oh my God, I lied to her. Oh my God, I lied to her. Like, and I couldn't stand myself. I just could not stand myself. And as early as I thought I could get away with it, I contacted her the next day. And I said, I am so sorry. I lied to you. And she emailed me or texted me back, whatever it was. And she said, smiling, she said, you know, I knew that before you opened your mouth. And I was like, huh? Because the energy is the energy, right? It didn't matter the words that I was using. The energy was, oh, crap, I just got caught and I have to cover it up because I'm ashamed of myself. It was all about shame, right? And instead, I could have just been honest in the moment and just said what happened. I forgot. Like, it, you know, I forgot. And honestly, knowing her the way I know her, she'd be like, oh, okay, could you contact her today? I mean, like, it wouldn't have been anything other than I had this thing built up in my mind about what I, you know, what I as the student was supposed to be, because here's this revered master and I have the ability to communicate with her on the level that I do, and what a, you know, gift that is. Like, I had this whole story, like this whole thing, you know, and I couldn't fail her because I had to be the perfect student. Megan. I had to be the perfect student. And there was no failing. Right? And the one time in my life that I had failed was a college course that I took. I was an English lit major. And I took a college course on, this is hysterical, it was on the Transcendentalists, of all things. So if that's like Thoreau, right? And Edgar Allan Poe. And so they're very spiritual writers. And back when I took the class, like, I so didn't get it, which is hysterical to me now because it's like, oh, my God, I so get you. But at the time, I took this class and we had to write our last assignment for the semester was to write this very large paper. And I didn't do it. And my teacher came back to me several times just saying, look, just give me something, like something, you know, like, I don't want to fail you, but I have to have something. And I never did it. And the shame of it placed me in a spot where I was like, kind of like the ostrich who sticks his head in the sand and pretends everything has gone away. That's like where I was functioning from. But internally, it just ate at me, right? Because I was, you know, I was a National Honor Society student. I was the perfect student, and I failed a class through my own negligence, of all things, you know? Gasp. The horror. And now I can laugh. But at the time, you know, it ate me alive for the longest time that I had done that, you know. And why? Well, because I wasn't true to myself. That's why. It didn't really have anything to do with the story. But your conscience is divine. Okay? Understand that. Your conscience is divine. So when your conscience is saying to you, what am I doing? Why did I just do that? You know, your conscience says, oh my gosh, you feel terrible about the fact that you didn't do that paper. Well, sit down tonight and do it. Do it. Don't run from it. Do it. You know, when you recognize that you're out on a date with a guy and he wants to kiss you and you go along with it because you feel like you're kind of supposed to, and inside your stomach goes, oh my God, like, what are you doing? Wake up. Stand up for yourself. You know, make your needs known. It's important. And so, of course, you know, it's like, it's going to be our repeating mantra. What does this come back to? Where are you making your choices from? We should turn it into a song. Where are you making your choices from? Because that's what it is all the time. And you have to listen to the inner voice that's telling you, you know, it knows. Inside, you know what's right, and you know what's not right. And inside, you really know the games you play with yourself to try to convince yourself that you're doing something that's right when you know it's not right. Yeah. So, you know, it's time to get very real about where we function from. It was funny, PLN, just before the show, she and I do some work together, and Sananda was there speaking to her and kind of concerning me. And he said that, you know, things in my work were going to start getting pretty gritty, which you're witnessing tonight, because that's exactly what's needed now. You know, all of the placating your students and coddling them, you know, give them the touchy-feely guru thing, it's kind of over. We just don't have time anymore. No, it doesn't mean I'm going to be mean. Unless I need to. But there just isn't time. So, you know, the message is not meant to be, you know, stern and nasty. It's just truthful. You know, it's just the truth. I pushed one of my students very recently to look at something that is very truthful in where he functions from. Is it pretty to look at? No, not at all. You know, is it something that he doesn't want to look at? Of course. But is it necessary? Absolutely. If he wants to be the person that he says he wants to be, you better believe it. And we're all held to this standard. No one's excluded. I'm not excluded just because I've reached a level of whatever we want to call it that you haven't. I'm not excluded. I'm more responsible for it now. Understand? What was that? What's the quote from? With great power comes great
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Yeah, it's perfect because it's so true. You know, as you continue on your journey and you move into greater and greater understandings, you're given those understandings from your guides. You're held accountable for walking them. In the walking of them, the mental understanding becomes experiential. When it's experiential, you better believe you are held accountable for continuing to function from that level. It's one thing to have a mental understanding and then not follow it. But once you have an experiential understanding of something and you don't follow it, it's not good. There is definitely a greater responsibility to yourself at that place. You'll actually push yourself back. It's really important. Now that I've scared everybody. But it can be a little unnerving. Did you want to say something? You want to come over here? Okay.
I almost brought the pillow with me.
What? I have to brought the pillow with me. I recently experienced something with work. But what preceded it, I was sitting on my couch and I just wanted to watch TV, and I had something that I needed to do for work. And this thought came to me that I am so lazy, like extremely lazy, and I don't want to be responsible for anything. I just want to sit here and watch TV and just do absolutely nothing. And then what came after that was that I really need to look at that, because on the other side of that, when I don't have anything to do, if I do have a free night or something, I'm like, you know, I feel like I have to do something. Like, what can I do? And then the next day I was at work and I was talking to, I'm a college teacher, and I was talking to my program chair, and this particular class that seems to be that I always end up teaching it every semester now, he didn't have anyone to staff this class that I seem to be having to teach every semester, and now it's becoming multiple sections. And the problem is that it was going to be a lot more work for me. And that whole laziness concept came to me, and I was kind of stewing over it because I didn't really want to take this other class. It would have been a lot on me, and I kind of had this thought of, which mine was coming with all these justifiers, and that I'm always overdoing things. Like, I'm taking two extra classes this semester, and, you know, how could I handle something else? And what came to me is that, so what? So what if it's going to be a lot more work for you? If this particular class is something that it seems that you have to be teaching, and now the universe is going to throw multiple sections out at you, and you might be responsible for 80 students, then it is what it is. That is your service, and that's where you need to be. And I knew that. Mm-hmm. And saying, you know, functioning from your deeper understandings, I knew that. but mine is coming up with all these different justifiers or reasons as to why it's not in my best interest to do it. And then I finally, you know, just, you know, got still, and all of that disappeared, and what was left was truth, and it was, you're going to do it. Mm-hmm. And you just do it. You don't think about it any other way, and it'll work its way out.
Oh, I love it.
I just love that story. I adore that story because it's so true. And everybody holds, I was just saying to this to the group before, that everybody, you know, you hold your divine knowing within you, and no one's excluded from that. Just because consciousness has fallen, you still are divine, right? Your divinity hasn't gone anywhere. It's just covered up, remember? Excuse me. So in the moment, I love how you said you just got still. Because that's so key. It is so key that for those of you who have done enough work that you have the observer that can actually witness, oh, there's like this whole story going on, or there's this big internal dialogue I can feel, and it doesn't feel good, right? That's, for so many people, that's all you need to do. Just get still, right? If it's a question of, do I do this or do I do that, you already have the answer, right? But the answer doesn't come from your head. The answer comes from your heart. And I don't mean it in a sappy kind of, you know, oh, it's your heart kind of way. That's not what I mean. It's your spiritual heart. It's your, you know, your power is there. Your God self sits there. Your God self knows the proper path for you. It just does, right? And all you have to do is pay attention. Follow its lead, right? So beautiful, because, you know, there are a lot of people right now dealing exactly with that, issues around being lazy, right? And for most people, it is an issue. Unless the issue is that you're the exact opposite, a workaholic. Like, I mean, just to the point where it just is nonstop and you literally can't do anything. You can't sit still for 5 seconds other than to sleep. Like, that's another issue. But for most people, that's not their issue. Let's face it. Yeah, we're Americans. we're Americans. We have great TV. Oh, gosh. I don't watch TV, by the way. But anyway. Okay. This laziness thing is a really big thing that's up right now for people to look at, because it's necessary. That thing, the stories that run about how, you know, it's such a victim story. It's just completely mired in victimhood. Oh, poor me. Like, people want to throw more work on me, and I'm so overworked, and I'm underpaid, and I never get time to myself. You know, please. And you saw it. What was right there? Oh my gosh, it's an opportunity for service. On a level you wouldn't have seen before unless it had come to you the way it came to you, right? And now she can do something with that. And now she can be a vessel of the divine in service to this person, in service to those kids, in service to the collective. And that's what we're all here to do. But we can't do it when we're completely stuck in the dialogue that says, I shouldn't have to. You know, people ask too much of me. Now, does it mean you become a doormat? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It doesn't mean that at all. Because that's, of course, what everyone else says the next thing. Well, if you think I've been, blah, blah. It's like the next thing that's going to happen. Mind always thinks it's one or the other. It can't ever see that both are accurate simultaneously. You're not a doormat, right? You just pay attention to the story that comes, and the story is whining. Now it gives you an opportunity to sit and look and say, okay, what really needs to happen here? Let's get the personal self out of it. What needs to happen here? And just get still, and you'll get your answer. Now your job is to follow what you get and not to start arguing with it. Because, again, that's what most people would do. Or they'd go, oh, huh. Well, that can't be right. And then you start questioning your knowing. And don't ever do that. Right? There's a couple things you just don't do. You don't question your knowing when it comes. Right? And you don't judge yourself. Remember the soul, like, will back away. You don't judge yourself. When you screw up, see it for what it is. Move forward. No judgment. It's completely unnecessary. You're not serving anybody or anything by judging yourself harshly, you know, for falling short someplace. It's ridiculous. The only thing it means is you just haven't completely gotten the lesson yet. That's all it means. It's no big deal. Right? No big deal. All right. How are we doing time-wise?
We have 2 minutes and 5 seconds.
Should we do a countdown? Okay, so our song tonight for meditation is Peace Train from Cat Stevens. It's an old classic for old people like me. And I love this song. We used it during that Add Your Energy meditation, and it was beautiful. And we're going to do it tonight because there's so much unrest in the world. And it's a good opportunity for us to kind of restate that your job here is to not to pray for peace or to pray for the end of war, but to just be that, right? Be peace. Just be it. That's all you have to do. It's not about you changing anything in the external world. It's about you embodying your divine nature. And your divine nature is peace itself, truly. And when you're at peace, you can be in the middle of a war zone and it wouldn't matter. So since there is so much going on in the world right now, I'm not going to ask that we, you know, pray for one side or another because that's ridiculous. It's all ridiculous. It all needs to come to an end. And so we can take this few minutes, 4 minutes and 12 seconds to be exact, Killian. We can take this few minutes to really focus on being the peace within our heart that we would wish for others and to send that energy out into the world. So be at peace yourself first and take that energy and just let it move from you anywhere it needs to go. So let's hold that intent tonight, okay? As we go into this meditation, enjoy it very much. Our deepest love to you, and we will see you next week. Good night.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world as one.
You are divine.